June 22nd, 2026, a Bayagiri monastery. At the pleasure of going to receive our Thai Ajahns, our Lumpurs, who have agreed to come join us for our upcoming 30th anniversary event, the most senior being Lungpo Damrong Suchito, also known as Lungpo Damrong Ban Bloom. Finally, I can say that. Been practicing that for about a couple of weeks now. Ban Bloom. Bloom PT is gladness, joy. And then there's, and he's been ordained for, I believe, 61 years. And then we have Lungpo Damrong Siri Bato, who is also known as Lungpo Damrong Ubon, and 57 Vasas. And he was here last year, so it's wonderful that he can come again. And then Lungpo Jundi, who many of us know well, and Tanajan Sek, who many of us know well. And in a couple days, Ajahn Amaro, I suppose now it's Lungpo Amaro, will be coming, will be arriving. And Ajahn Moshe, Ajahn Sudanto, Ajahn Kurudamo, and others. And it's kind of fun, enjoyable to think about just experiences that I personally have had with these different Lumpurs over the years. I've met them, crossed paths with them in Thailand, but never really had more than a short interaction with them. So I know Lungpo Damrong Ban Bloom, he would be a Wapananachat. I've been probably 4, 5, 6 times been to Yom Um's annual Git Nimon, and Lungpo Damrong, I think both of them would be there. Lungpo Damrong Ban Bloom would always be there. So just seeing them over the years, but then it's just very wonderful that they're actually here. They're actually here now. And it's a recollection of people who have devoted their entire lives to being in the rooms. And that sense of commitment and patient endurance, and that you have these people who are elderly and they're wearing robes and shining examples of really what's possible if we follow this path of the Buddhist teachings. And it's very helpful. I know for myself, it's very helpful to see these kinds of examples. And it can also be mixed. I think, well, I'd like to be like that. I'd like to be able to have a sense of ease and well-being in that way. And so then when things get difficult, well, I should be more like that. But then to see in the moment, well, things are just like this now. So this is what they teach, is patient endurance. So, and just how difficult it is. There are so many obstacles to go through and so many challenges. And we might think, well, I should be peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Just like in the Metta Sutta, should be able to be like that all the time. But it's difficult to be peaceful and calm and wise and skillful. It's difficult to be kind and calm. And it takes that sense of discernment, letting go, and also wise attention, yoniso manasikara, because it's actually quite easy for the heart, the mind, to drop into the unwholesome. It's quite easy. It's quite easy to be critical and judgmental. That's a habitual way, that's a habitual tendency for the mind, depending on our temperament. Some people are kind of smiley and happy most of the time, but the mind can have this habit of being judgmental and critical. I should be this way, I should be that way, or this person should be this way, they should be that, or the monks should be this way, they shouldn't be that way. And it's very easy to do that and normal. So no judgment for being just noticing when that, noticing the way it is, noticing how things are now in this moment. It's easy to think, oh, I shouldn't have all this emotional garbage happening, and all this mental states, all this, all these resentments and angers. I shouldn't have this. It shouldn't be this way. But then in that resistance, there's a lot of suffering and it gets compounded. So to open to those things, to check in terms of where the mind is at, where the heart is at, and open to it. If there's fear, let there be fear. Just we can get interested in it. And how, what does it feel like? What's the effect on the body? If there's resentment, let there be resentment. But what's the effect on the body? Where is it coming from? And if there's sense of spaciousness and openness, then let there be spaciousness and openness, and we can get interested in it. What were the cause and conditions for that? If there's a sense of disconnection and alienation, we can get interested in that. What are the causes of that? If there's a sense of wholesome focus and unity in the mind and the heart, and then getting interested in that. And however it is, these all come from causes and conditions. And it just so much, I just keep coming back to, it's like growing a tree. All we have to do, sometimes what we have to do is step back and let it grow. If we get too involved with it, it might not grow in the best way possible. So sometimes it's just about putting those causes and conditions in place, the precepts, the daily meditation practice, and so on, the chanting, the reflections that we do, the studying of the suttas, the listening to teachings. That's like putting fertilizer on the tree. That's like allowing it to have proper soil, and it's having it be planted in the right location with proper sunlight, and giving it just enough water, but not too much. And then it just takes time to grow. And at first it doesn't seem like it's growing. So when we're maybe an anagarika or a novice, then it might not seem like it's growing, but it is. It's just not growing visibly because it's putting down roots. A plant has to put down roots before the top of it grows. A tree has to put down roots before the top of it starts to get taller. So that's really necessary. There has to be the right type of soil, the fertilizer, and then it starts putting down roots. In the putting down of roots, it can be painful. And those roots have to work and push through the soil. And so the developing a sense of perseverance. Maybe one translation of Kanti could be perseverance, developing the strength of our perseverance. And then over time, different kamma can come up, different obstacles that we didn't think would come up, what we call karmic obstacles. These come up over time, things we, curveballs or things that we weren't expecting. Maybe we thought our practice would go one way and then it went another way. Or we thought keeping precepts and meditating would be one way and then it was another way. There's all sorts of obstacles that can arise based on our karma, based on our character. And so there can be a lot of modification of our behavior. One definition of Dhamma practice could be the modification of our behavior of body, speech, and mind, the training of our behavior of body, speech, and mind to be more wholesome and less unwholesome. And then it seems like, so I've been doing this long enough and I've seen my own path, and I've watched many, many others come to the training, and some stick with it and some decide to leave. And lay people, monastics, and people who come to practice sincerely, then it seems like there is quite a bit of training that can happen, quite a bit of modification of one's behavior that can happen to a certain point. And then we reach a point where we come up against our inner character, and perhaps we could call them our hidden tendencies or underlying tendencies, the things that we're not really going to be able to just abandon easily. So we come up against our own character. We come up against ourselves. And this can be kind of like a glass ceiling in the practice. So we reach a certain point where it doesn't seem like we can get past our own character. It doesn't seem like we can get past our own tendencies. And that's a very challenging point to reach. So we can study a lot and even have a pretty good in-depth understanding of the Buddha's teachings. And then when we apply the practice and we do the practice, then we'll reach a certain point where there will be certain tendencies that will be unquestioned. And so it's all about the underlying attitude, the way, how we're coming to the practice, and far less about the techniques that we're employing. What's the underlying attitude behind why we're even employing the practice and the techniques that we're doing? And so this is where that sense of really honest, deep reflection comes in, coming back to how is it now? How is the mind now? How is the heart now? Those are the things we're not going to be able to change easily. And so I think what it comes back to is, like, sometimes people ask what types of qualities are needed to sustain the practice long term. And I would say it's the quality of heart that is able to change those things that we don't really want to change. We'll get to a certain point where we either remain stuck in our very strong underlying character tendencies, or we go out on a limb and we courageously decide to question them and adapt. So that's why Lhompar Cha said, there's a quote of Lhompar Cha's. He says, people don't really change. So people practice, but they don't really change unless they're forced to. It's very difficult to really adapt the underlying character. And that's what I tend to reflect on when I meet and see the disciples of Lhompar Cha who've been practicing for a long time and dedicated their entire lives to the practice. It just seems like that's really what it takes to really change. Just giving up everything. And it's kind of one of these sometimes difficult to read teachings of the Buddha, where there's a teaching where the Buddha says, apart from abandoning all, apart from relinquishing all, apart from giving up all, apart from letting go of all, I do not see any security for beings. So I know when I first read that, I don't know if I agree with that. There's some nice things that I can get involved with. But now I definitely think that's the case. So it's something worth thinking about. It's difficult to really change. And then we get to the point where it seems like we might be able to do that. We might actually have enough confidence and faith, trust in the teachings to really be able to allow things to drop away, to allow the tree to grow beyond that potentially difficult point. There might be a drought and the tree has a hard time growing while there's a drought, and then it needs to be able to survive through that period. And then if it can survive through that period, then it becomes much bigger, much stronger. That part of the tree that endured the drought is going to have tighter grain and be stronger. I think it's very much the same with us, and there's going to be beauty there. So we see somebody like Lhompa Damrong Ban Bloom, or Lhompa Damrong Uban, or Lhompa Jandi, or Lhompa Pisano, or Lhompa Sumedho, or Lhompa Amaro, anybody who's really made it that far. Somebody like Lhompa Damrong Ban Bloom, I like saying that, Ban Bloom, is very metta, very easygoing, very lighthearted. And so I think, oh, so nice to be around this old grandpa monk who's just very funny and likes to make other people laugh, likes to do it. But then he did the hard practice. that's the result of the hard practice. The super metta, the lightheartedness, the being able to joke around all the time with everybody, that's the result of the hard practice. That's the result of the relinquishing all. It doesn't come from cultivating an attitude of being jokey, being lighthearted. Not at all. Being able to be like that comes from the letting go. So these great Ajahns, they weren't always like this. They had to train under Lumbar Cha. And it wasn't always easy. In fact, most of the time, Lumbar Cha intentionally made it. He would switch things up. We might start to feel comfortable and, okay, kind of got a feel for this schedule and kind of get on cruise control a little bit. And then he would switch it up, not letting people get too comfortable. And so it can seem like being comfortable it is nice. It's nice, but we don't practice to get nice things. It's another cool Lumbar Cha quote I like. We don't practice for the sake of heaven. We practice to put an end to suffering. Those are two different things. Heaven would just be the good in exclusion to the bad. Putting an end to suffering is transcending the good and the bad. Or we could think of like the mudra of Venerable Somdet Do with the left hand below, the right hand above, and the heart above that. So there's the unwholesome, the wholesome, and the heart which transcends both. And when Longpo Pisano gives talks, there's always kind of a hidden gem I'll be able to take out of it. And the one from a couple days ago, near the end of the talk, there it is. There's the hidden gem. Is that the heart, the awareness is already released in itself. The awareness is already released. It's just reflecting and considering in ways that we uncover it. So when you have a seed of a tree, the potential for the entire tree is there, but it's just a matter of growing it. Or Longpa Liam last year, when he was here, reflecting on the green Buddha image that we have, he said that was just a stone before, but the Buddha was within it. The potential for the Buddha was within it, but it took a lot of work to uncover it. It took a lot of work to create it. So the potential is there. It's just a matter of setting up the proper conditions in order to realize it. So the proper conditions are the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha classed that as the supreme conditions. So the right water, the right sunlight, the right fertilizer. You can have a beautiful tree. Sometimes you have these madrone trees, these very heavy trees. They're extremely heavy. And these really old, thick, wide madrone trees that took a long time to grow. And if one of them dies and we end up cutting into it, you see the shrine we have is the madrone shrine. And that's the Dhamma of the wood, is that the most beautiful parts is where the most suffering was happening, and it grew through that suffering. It's not that we need to make ourselves suffer. We already suffer enough. We don't have to make ourselves suffer anymore, but we grow through that suffering. So if we're able to grow through that suffering, then that's the clarity, that's the beauty, if we're able to grow through it. So there's the Noble Eightfold Path allows us to grow through the suffering, the patient endurance, the perseverance allows us to grow through the suffering over time. And then with that sense of strength, that foundation. So the tree is going to grow large eventually and large enough to bear a lot of weight. An older tree can bear a lot of weight. The old growth redwoods. So I've heard that a redwood is classed as old growth if it reaches the age of 800 years old. And the old growth redwoods, they bear immense weight. And over that long, long, long period of time, they develop the ability to bear immense weight. And not only that, but they grow. The foundation continues to get stronger. They grow from the bottom. They push the entire tree up and becomes incredibly dense. Actually changes into the molecular structure actually changes into a different type of wood. the qualities and the structure, the cellular structure of a piece of old growth redwood are quite a bit different than a piece of new growth redwood.
Different qualities, different attributes to it. Because of the pressure, because of the immense pressure over hundreds of years pushing on those lower areas of the tree. And so when there is pressure, there can be beauty as well, if it's held in the right way. And then when you have a piece of wood and you sand it smoother and smoother and smoother, it's like it's clarifying those parts of the wood that have never been seen before. And that, as the clarity and the beauty shows up, that's like the mindfulness clarifying what's actually there. What is the experience? What does the suffering look like? What caused it? When the tree bends, it causes ripples in the wood. When the tree bends, then it has to strengthen in those areas where it's suffering more. It has to strengthen in those areas in order to bear that extra weight. And then it can be beautiful, playful, light. But it doesn't get there through just having it easy. It's just so interesting. So, yeah, we can train through these things. And when things are difficult, just to acknowledge the way things are. We might have these Ajahns come here and visit, and the mind might not be in a positive state. My mind should be in a positive state. I should be full of gratitude right now. And it's just all sorts of resentment and da 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 da. And well, that's just how it is. And that's the duty of these Ajahns, is to point that out to us. Just look at how it is and just otan, endure, persevere. And we won't regret it if we do that. So I think that's an important point, the lightheartedness, the playfulness, the light energy, the super metta. It doesn't come from directly cultivating those things, but it comes through having been through the crucible, having been through the training. It's kind of similar to the teaching on stream entry, that the three factors that are relinquished, Sakaya Ditti, the three underlying tendencies that are relinquished, Sakaya Ditti, or personality belief, self-view, Silabhata Paramasa, attachment to rites and rituals, or Vichikicca, the doubt. Those things don't, so in just the same way, those things don't come through, say, investigating our Sakaya Ditti, investigating Silabhata Paramasa, investigating our doubts. It comes through the insight into anicca, into impermanence. And so the profound insight into impermanence, then those three things fall away as a result. So we have to be careful, because sometimes if we're investigating Sakaya Ditti, it could inadvertently strengthen it. If we're investigating our attachment to rites and rituals, for example, if we think, oh, you know, what's this chanting and having Buddha images and bowing to Buddha images and having different images in the monastery and sitting in a certain way in meditation, and that's attachment to rites and rituals. So I won't chant, I won't put my hands in Anjali, nope, I won't bow, because all those things are attachment to rites and rituals. So that's a danger, because then if we really at a deeper level, attachment to rites and rituals is thinking that any practice that we do, or any chant that we do, or any action that we do in and of itself will lead to liberation. So if we think by chanting, by bowing and so on, that those things in and of themselves, or by having a Buddha image or bowing to a Buddha image, that action in and of itself will lead to liberation, that's Silabhata Paramasa. But the flip side of that is if we think by not bowing, by not chanting, by not doing those things, that will lead to liberation, that's also Silabhata Paramasa, because it's still just an external thing. And so it's a matter of the mind. It's a matter of that insight into anicca. And then the doubt, there's a couple different ways it's defined, but the doubt is one is no longer perplexed about wholesome and unwholesome states. So there's that Dhamma compass which comes about. So that comes in just the same way that the lightheartedness, the super metta, doesn't come about through trying to be lighthearted, trying to have metta. It comes about through the hard training and the letting go. In the same way,
The relinquishment of those three factors would come about through the insight into impermanence, not through focusing directly on those three factors. So I think some of these reflections, it's just important to remember these things because it is so difficult. So when we see other people going through difficulties, or maybe the mind is unwholesome from time to time, to give each other space for that, to give it time. If there is suffering, if somebody else is suffering, that's okay. And we can root for them, be there for them. And we're all in it together. We're all in the same boat. Everybody who decides to try to do the Dhamma training, we're all going to go through various obstacles and we're going to run up against ourselves. And that's good. That's a good thing. And just doing our best to support each other in this practice. So I'm just so happy that these Ajahns are here to support us, and we'll get to see more of them tomorrow. So we already got to pay respects to our Thai Ajahns, and that was actually quite nice, quite lovely. Okay, so I think that's good for this evening. It's been a long day for myself with traveling, so I think I'll just leave it there.